Chapter 20. Time date record anomaly. Estimated 0610 hours, September 23, 2552, military calendar. Aboard captured Covenant dropship, Epsilon Eridani system, en route to surface of Reach. Pulaski accelerated the captured dropship to its maximum velocity, just under Mach 1. The craft arced up and joined the long convoy of Covenant ships, troop transports, scavenger drones, and Seraph fighters, as they descended from a higher orbit down to the surface. The formation of alien vessels headed straight toward Menachite Mountain. Covenant communiques scrolled across a screen next to the pilot seat and then ceased. "Incoming transmissions from the convoy. I guess they don't like strays," Pulaski muttered calmly, looking at the Covenant calligraphy.
"They're not shooting," the Admiral said, gripping the back of Pulaski's seat. "We're fine. Just fly, warrant officer."
He turned to the Master Chief.
"Get 'em ready, son."
The Chief nodded and moved aft to the rest of the squad. His three Spartans, as well as Lieutenant Haverson, Locklear, and Sergeant Johnson, stood over an array of weapons laid out on the deck. Anton ticked off the inventory. "Shotguns, a fuel rod gun, jackhammer, rocket launchers, plasma and HE pistols, and every type of grenade. Take your pick." The Chief picked up 5 clips of ammunition for his ME-5B assault rifle, 3 frag grenades, and a shotgun for close work. Nothing fancy. He wanted to keep it simple so he could keep one eye on the rest of his team. Locklear hefted the fuel rod gun, grunting from the exertion. The weapon glowed an eerie green along its fuel casing. Grace relieved him of the too heavy weapon and shouldered it with ease.
"Make sure you get a handgun," the Chief told Locklear. "We'll be in close quarters underground."
"Roger that,"
Locklear said.
"We're close,"
the Admiral called out. The Master Chief moved up to the cockpit to watch. The line of dropships and drones maneuvered toward a pile of truck-sized stones that had been carved from the mountain. A spiraling hole, 10 kilometers across, sat where Menachite Mountain had once risen majestic and impregnable, covered with forests and glaciers. It was only a strip mine now, with a single shaft drilled down its center. A Covenant cruiser hovered over the shaft, and the purple glow of a grav lift knifed into the hole.
"That's our LZ," Whitcomb announced. "Pulaski, I want you to drive this crate straight down, but ease up a tad on the engines and let their grav beam do the work. It'll take us all the way down to whatever's at the bottom."
"With respect, Admiral," Pulaski said, "I'm not sure we'll fit."
The Admiral squinted at the hole.
"We'll fit," he said. "I have every confidence in you, warrant officer. Now make it quick. I don't think anyone topside is going to think us going down there is a good idea."
"Yes, sir."
Her eyes locked onto the hole.
"No problem, sir."
The Master Chief marveled at the Admiral's lack of fear. He trusted the man's judgment. He had been criticized during his campaigns for unorthodox tactics and strategies, but his insight had been proven correct each time. The Master Chief, however, also had observed that the higher up the chain of command you received your orders, the more likely those orders would demand the near impossible.
"Hang on," the Chief called back to his team.
Pulaski nosed the Covenant dropship over and plummeted into the dark purple scintillating grav beam. The instant they entered the field, the ship jumped, accelerated, and shuddered into the hole drilled through solid rock. Cut off from the thin shreds of sunlight above, the ship went dark. The internal running lights glowed a faint blue.
"We've got no room to maneuver in here," Pulaski whispered.
Lieutenant Haverson climbed forward.
"Admiral Whitcomb, sir, I see how we can get in, assuming this hole leads somewhere, but it's the other side of your plan that's unclear. What's our exit strategy, sir?"
The Admiral's steely glare pinned Haverson.
"I've got it figured out. You just shoot when I tell you to and keep it all puckered up tight. Got it?"
Haverson clenched his jaw, looking extremely unsatisfied.
"Yes, sir."
Pulaski focused intently on the walls of the tunnel rushing toward her craft.
"Short-range sensors have a contact," she said. "It looks like the bottom of the shaft. ETA 60 seconds at this speed."
The Admiral leaned closer to the Chief and whispered,
"We're gonna get hit heavy by whatever's down there. You make sure you hit them back 3 times harder.
and you get Anton on point and see if he can't locate your Spartans. I'm guessing they've gone to ground."
Before the chief could reply, the admiral moved aft and grabbed an assault rifle and two HE pistols. He clipped plasma and frag grenades to his belt.
30 seconds,
Pulaski called out. She cut the engines, and the dropship coasted on the grav beam only.
"There's something down there," she said. "Is that sunlight?"
The dropship emerged into a titanic room, 3 kilometers across, circular, with a dozen galleries circumscribing the space. Overhead, a holographic sun and a dozen moons wheeled along its domed ceiling. Except for the hole drilled into the mountain by the Covenant, the holographic projection was perfect. The admiral scrutinized the room, and his dark eyes locked onto a gathering of Covenant forces on the floor, near one edge of the great room.
"There," he said and pointed. "I make out about 100 of them, a few elites, jackals, mostly grunts. Looks like they're clearing a cave-in and not ready for company yet. Good. Pulaski, land us 0.5 kilometer from them and then dust off. I want you back in that hole ASAP. Plug it up. We don't want to leave our back door wide open."
"Aye, sir,"
Pulaski replied. Admiral Whitcomb addressed Lee. "You're our rear guard, son. Stay here and guard the ship with Pulaski. Sorry."
"Sir! Yes, sir,"
Lee replied. The Master Chief detected a hint of bitterness in the Spartan's voice for drawing what he undoubtedly would think was soft duty. Their dropship eased lower until it was a meter above the blue tiles of the room. The side hatches opened. The chief jumped out first, followed by Anton, Lieutenant Haverson, and Locklear. From the hatch on the opposite side leapt the admiral, Sergeant Johnson, and Grace. The dropship immediately rose into the hole in the ceiling, far enough in to be shielded from any stray ground fire.
"Move, everyone!"
the admiral growled. He pointed at Grace and Locklear.
"You two, fire long-range weapons! Everyone else, haul ass! Take them out, people!"
The admiral's plan was sound. He wasn't risking the dropship, their only means of escape, by landing too close to the enemy. They still had the element of surprise. The Covenant would have never anticipated an assault on the heart of their operation. But how long would this advantage last? How long before that cruiser blasted their dropship to atoms? The Covenant were not their most dangerous enemy. Time was. Grace paused, muscled the fuel rod gun to a 45-degree angle into the air, and launched around. The alien weapon hissed and spat a glowing sphere of energy. The blast arced over the 0.5-kilometer distance, impacted, and exploded in a green flash. Grunts and jackals flew through the air. Locklear fired 2 jackhammer rockets, then dropped the spent launcher. The pair of rockets connected with a cluster of elites who had, until a second ago, been running the show. The twin explosion obscured that end of the room with billowing clouds of dust, fire, and smoke. The Master Chief motioned for his team to spread out and move forward at a jog. Ahead, there were silhouetted grunts and jackals in the dust clouds, screaming and shooting at the air, each other, anything that moved.
"Keep moving," the Master Chief said. "Move while they don't know what's hit them."
Anton paused and knelt next to a set of tracks dug into the tiled floor.
"Kelly's been this way," he reported over the comm.
The Master Chief clicked on Red Team's comm frequency.
"Kelly, Fred, Joshua, Spartans, acknowledge this signal."
Only static answered him. 100 meters from the stunned Covenant work crew, a stray plasma bolt fired from the hazy, rubble-strewn region detonated a few meters from the Master Chief. He sent a spray of automatic fire across the area, hoping to force the enemy to keep their heads down. Grace halted and fired the fuel rod again. A second glowing burst of radioactive energy flashed overhead and detonated along the far wall. In the intense light, the Master Chief saw that 12 jackals had braced themselves along the wall and overlapped their energy shields to create a phalanx. Behind them, 5 elites readied plasma rifles.
"Down!"
he shouted, and dived to one side. Grace hit the floor and rolled away. Plasma bolts sizzled over their heads, and the Master Chief's shields drained as a shot hit too close. The barrage turned several of the blue tiles around him into a crater of blackened glass.
Grenades! Up and over those shields, Spartans!
Admiral Whitcomb bellowed. The Master Chief and Anton primed plasma grenades and hurled them from their prone positions. They hit the far wall and dropped into the cluster of elites and jackals, behind their shields. There was a pair of blue flashes, and the enemy formation blew apart. Jackals scattered and ran. Grace fired the fuel rod gun, hit the broken phalanx formation, and blew them literally to bits. She dropped the weapon.
Rad counter at max dosage, she called out. This thing's too hot to use anymore.
Back away, the chief ordered. Those things have a failsafe.
Grace sprang back just in time. The fallen fuel rod gun sparked, sputtered, and then blew with the force of a frag grenade. Blackened, twisted tile rained down on them. Locklear jogged up and fired at the grunts fleeing the evacuation. They weren't armed. Locklear mowed them down without remorse. From a pile of shattered stone, a pair of battered elites struggled to rise. Blood and bone exploded outward from their chests, and they spun around toward the source of this force. Boulders pushed away from the blocked passage. Three Spartans emerged from their cover, assault rifles smoking from their recent discharge. John knew instantly the three were Kelly, Fred, and Will. He ran forward to meet them. Fred lowered his weapon.
Anton, Grace, John, he said disbelievingly.
The Master Chief opened a comm channel to his Spartans. It's me. I wish I had time to explain everything. I will, later. Let's get the hell out of here first. Kelly quickly reached out and swiped her two fingers across John's faceplate. He wanted to return the smile, but at that moment, Admiral Whitcomb, running full force, skidded to a stop next to the Spartans. He was followed in short order by Haverson, Locklear, and Johnson, who kept looking over his shoulder to scan the huge empty room around them.
"Is this everyone?" Admiral Whitcomb asked.
"No, sir," Fred replied. "There's one more."
He turned and extended his hand back into the partially collapsed tunnel.
"Ma'am, it's safe to come out."
For a heartbeat, the Master Chief forgot that he was in the heart of an enemy's camp. He forgot about the war, that Reach had fallen, and everything else he had gone through in the last few days. He had never thought he would see her again. Dr. Halsey emerged from the partially caved-in tunnel. She brushed dust from the hem of her skirt and lab coat with one slender hand.
"Admiral Whitcomb," she said, "a pleasure to see you again. My thanks for the rescue. It was far timelier than you could imagine."
She turned to the Master Chief.
"Or is it you I have to thank for this daring operation, John?"
The Master Chief found he had no words to answer. He also bristled at her casual use of his given name, but he could forgive her that. She had always used his name, never his rank or serial number. He noticed the fist-sized crystal clutched in her hand. It had 1,000 facets and emitted a brilliant blue light the color of sapphires and sunlight on water.
"Thank anyone you want, Catherine," Admiral Whitcomb said. "Throw us all a party if that'll make you happy. Once we're out of here."
He clicked open his comm.
"Pulaski, get down!"
Sergeant Johnson set his hand on the Admiral's arm and nodded toward the far wall.
"What is it, Sergeant?"
The Admiral's voice died in his throat. The Master Chief's motion tracker flickered on his heads-up display, but there was no solid contact. Nor did he see anything across the entire 3-kilometer-wide cavern. Had it picked up a camouflaged elite? No. The dust in the air would have certainly given it away.
"No one move," the Admiral whispered.
John saw them then. He saw them all. He had missed them before, because he had thought it was the haze in the air rippling, the dust, maybe the distance causing a mirage-like image. He hadn't thought it possible for so many Covenant to be so still. On each level of the 12-tiered galleries that circumscribed the gigantic room stood Covenant soldiers. They crowded the balconies with grunts, jackals whose energy shields popped on, snarling elites, and several pairs of hunters with fuel rod cannons glowing green. The whine of thousands of plasma weapons charging filled the air like a swarm of locusts. No one moved. No one breathed except Locklear, who exhaled a long and heartfelt expletive. John tried to count them all. There had to be thousands on every level, A battalion at least, maybe more. They wouldn't even have to aim. All they had to do was shoot and fill the space with needle shards and boiling energy. They'd be vaporized before they could get halfway to the tunnel at their backs. A hunter pair roared with rage. They leveled their fuel rod cannons at John and his team, and with steady aim, discharged their weapons. A split second later, the rest of the alien horde opened fire.